Welcome to a special episode of Killing Time, hosted by two girls. Period.
That's it. That's two gals it. Today. That's all you're getting.
I think that this is the first Killing Time that we've ever done solo. Well, dual solo without a third.
We are just one, which is fine. Solo will do.
Absolutely. So we decided to do this type of an episode of Killing Time because obviously there's been a lot going on in the Moscow murders and the affidavit just came out. We are recording this on January 6th, a Friday. So whatever we're going to be talking about today is what we know at this very moment. And because the affidavit came out yesterday, there's a lot to talk about. And we thought we would do a whole episode dedicated to that.
Yeah, because Jack and I mean, I haven't been posting about it publicly. Jack's done some TikToks as the news has been breaking. But like, we are completely obsessed with understanding this case. I've been so sad thinking about the victims' families over the holidays, how scary this whole ordeal was for those whose lives were stolen. Like, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about them, and we just had to get to sort of the bottom of this affidavit, and we figured we'd take all of you along with us.
Absolutely. And I have been posting like on TikTok about it, but I've been very sparing about it because this has turned like the true crime community on TikTok into a fucking frenzy. And so much of it has been really heartbreaking and horrible because there's been so many like armchair detectives and internet sleuths like trying to make their own theories up and ruining people's lives like in the process of it. There was like it was a professor that one girl ended up trying to prove that she was the murderer. And now that professor is suing the TikToker for defamation and slander because it's like, you can't just do that.
No.
And that's why when I've been posting the TikToks, I've just been kind of being like, this is the news. This is the facts that have broken. And that's it. Very little, of my opinion.
Speculation. Yeah. And speculation can be really dangerous. And we're going to talk about some of that because I've been seeing some stuff online with some of the recent developments that are just, it's just like unacceptable.
Yeah.
And we'll get into all that as we come across it, because we have plans for how to lay all this out for you. But we're just going to sort of summarize at the very top. We're sure you know about this already, but on the evening of November 12th, 2022, four University of Idaho students, Madison Mogan, Kaylee Concalves, Zanna Kernodal, and her boyfriend Ethan Chapman, were all out and about with friends before returning to their three-level off-campus house on King Road at about 1:45 a.m. So Zanna, Madison, Kaylee, and two other females lived at this house, and they were all roommates. Ethan was staying the night at his girlfriend's house, and that's Zanna. So he was sleeping over the night but didn't live there. And the police the next morning, well, the next day at noon, were called, alerting them to a possible unconscious person at the scene. That's what the initial reporting was.
Right. And what the police discovered when they arrived was beyond anybody's worst nightmares, and it would captivate the nation to this day as we're recording this. So Madison, Kaylee, Zanna, and Ethan had all been horrifically murdered. The crime stunned the college community of Moscow, sparking weeks of speculation and thousands of tips before accumulating in an arrest 7 weeks after the killings occurred. So now, at this very point, the arrest has been made. Questions loomed as we waited for Brian Koberger to be extradited from Pennsylvania to Idaho for the probable cause affidavit to be unsealed so we could learn how the police zeroed in on this alleged killer. And it finally has been. So we're going to sift through this entire affidavit for you. It was 19 pages long. There's a lot of info in the document. So I thought that we could kind of go through it from start to finish and talk about it.
Yeah. Before we do, though, some of the stuff I've seen on the news, I'd love to talk about it because I remember just seeing his face when they said they made an arrest. Like 100 people texted it to me, and his face terrified me. I don't know what I was expecting, but like now I've also been seeing news reports of him driving with his dad, and it's all very surreal. To see this.
He is it's so fucking cliche, right? But like, he is a quintessential scary, terrifying sociopath with dead black eyes.
And what's so weird to me is that he's 28, but he strikes me as someone who's like 40. He's got a really weird vibe.
I mean, there's so many comments of people being like, that is the oldest 28-year-old I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, and just his vibe. It's been weird because I think in the past week, we're now seeing video of him, you know, being in the courthouse, being arraigned and coming in and out and the traffic stop and all that. So we're kind of seeing his mannerisms, and he's really fucking terrifying and very like quiet confidence and like... it's just, it's very upsetting.
Yeah. And we have learned a lot about him, which we can touch on when we're done going through the affidavit, just like about his personal life and family. And his family initially spoke out saying they're supporting him and they want to see this presumption of innocence, you know, system unfold. But that was before the affidavit came out. So I'm curious how they feel after reading all the evidence, because it's pretty significant.
I did see, again, this could be, it's so hard kind of to sift through information unless it's literally coming from an official court document or from the police. But I did hear that the parents are not supporting and are not paying for his counsel.
I don't think they're paying for the counsel because he was given a public defender. But I saw when he was arraigned, I saw his sister. His sister had like blonde hair and pigtails and the mom in there. So like somebody was there to show up for him. Unclear as to whether that remains after the evidence, you know, because at the time he's like, I'm going to prove my innocence. But no one had seen any of the evidence against him yet, not even his family. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this unfolds.
Do we want to kind of talk about his personal life and stuff first, or do we want to do that after the affidavit? Because I think we could kind of dive into that right now.
Let's dive into it now. What do you want to start with?
You go.
So I have just been reading articles about him. And obviously, I mean, if you have been following this case at all, you know that he was a criminology PhD student, right? That he studied criminal justice in undergrad, that he studied psychology, well-educated. You learn from high school that in high school he was overweight. He now is not, and he's hyper, hyper vegan, very controlling about his diet. We learn that he was a teacher's assistant, super hard grader, until after the murders, apparently he lightened up and was giving everyone hundreds, which is the most bizarre shit I've ever heard.
Right. And then also, I think that it was his aunt and uncle that spoke out, and they were talking about when he would come over and they would be cooking for him, and he like did not want any of his food touching any pots or pans that meat had touched. So he was like a crazy, crazy vegan, which has got to be the most ironic thing in this entire story. Like, it's fucking disgusting.
Well, it's actually interesting. I was talking to Matt about this. For those of you listening who don't know, my boyfriend is vegan. He writes vegan cookbooks, but he's not annoying. Like, he'll eat off of my fork that had meat on it. He's not this guy, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not surprised at all, because it's a control thing. And especially, you know, he seems like a very regimented, weird person, you know? And Jack, do you want to talk about what he posted on Reddit that's since been deleted about, like, that had to do with his school?
Yeah, I mean, we can get into that right now. Let me pull up the screenshots. But yeah, what I was going to say, I'm like, he wasn't a vegan for like any moral.
Certainly not.
Reasons.
No.
Okay, so yeah, we can get into this. Now, this is as of today when we're recording this.
More may come out in the next week.
Yeah, but like, who knows what kind of info is going to come out in the next couple of days. Maybe not that much.
And maybe we'll update it.
Yeah, but I think that there was a gag order for the police, so I don't know how much is actually going to come out. Uh-huh. Anyways, so now I'm sure if you know anything about the case, you know that he made this survey that he posted on Reddit to the ex-con subreddit. And basically the survey was asking all of these ex-cons about crimes that they had committed in the past, and more specifically, their thoughts and their feelings and their emotions while committing these crimes, and sort of their thought process of
what choices they made and why they made them. Like, why did you choose that entry point? How did you feel? Why did you choose your weapon? How did you choose what time? Or how did you choose your victim? Like, this shit, kind of like what he did. If he is, in fact, the killer.
Right. And this is one of the things that I had made a TikTok about. Again, no opinions really, other than the fact that it's really fucking weird.
Yeah.
And I got so much weird feedback about it, being like, well, no, this is what like a criminology student would post about. And I'm like, well, it is weird, retrospectively, now that we know what he did. Like, this is really, really strange behavior, because it's like you're trying to get into the mind of a criminal and or a murderer or whatever, and he's probably sort of, if he's a sociopath, like, it's like he might be like taking these little things from every answer that he is getting to plan whatever he's going to plan in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And I had I read an article where one of the students who, one of his peers in his criminology PhD spoke, and she said that he would get in very hostile arguments with people in class. He was a contrarian, and that one female student like stormed out because he was mansplaining and so rude, like that he had this kind of reputation of being really combative and difficult and like a know-it-all,
right.
Which again, does not surprise me about this dude. This dude looks like people I would fight with in class who just think they're, I know this guy, not on a dangerous level, but I've been annoyed at people like this before.
Oh my God. I think that we all know somebody that is like that, and they're the most annoying fucking people in the entire world.
Ever. But, you know, the more we're learning about him, it really, I keep telling people, I'm like, this is going to be one of the most shocking crimes of our generation, just because of all the context. Like, I saw an article the other day, and it was BTK's daughter on with a journalist, and she's like, I fear that he may have been communicating with my father, because he studied, Brian did, under Catherine Ramsland, who's a profiler. Yeah. And so it's like, is he? Was he? Like, I'm fascinated to know what the police found on his computers. Like, so much will come out if there's a trial. And if there's not a trial, there's going to be so many questions. I hope there is, but I don't want that for the families if they don't want it.
I know. Well, and that's the craziest thing. It's like, the more that we learn, the more that we realize what we don't know and how many questions there could be. Cause it's like, there's a lot of whys once you learn more and more information, because especially the fact, and again, this goes back to these internet sleuths that are like blaming the other roommates, blaming the ex-boyfriends, blaming their teachers. It's like, this guy was on the police's radar immediately, but he was on nobody's radar publicly. So it's like, we obviously do not know anything that is going on as like anybody from the outside.
Yeah. And I want to give the police a shout out, because they were getting so much flack, and turns out they had a suspect the whole time. Right. But everyone's like, it's been a month. That being said, I was floored when it was like week 7. I was like, they might not solve this. Like, if they don't have him yet. I was terrified, but it turns out they were just really dotting their I's and crossing their T's, and they did a really good job. Like, when you read this affidavit, it's like they were on top of it moment one and kept it really close to the vest, and the investigation didn't suffer because of it. So I think internet sleuths, they mean well. It's why I never engage in that kind of thing.
No.
Because, like, I don't give the police a chance, you know? It was not a cold case. It never was.
Well, and that's what was so interesting, because it's like they were releasing basically no information, right? Yeah. They released the information about the White Elantra. And what I thought was so interesting is what they were asking people to look for was the wrong year. And they did that purposefully, because they already knew it was him. I think his car was a 2015 or 2016. And I think they're asking for a 2011 to 13.
They wanted to see what he was going to do. Yeah. And we're going to tell you what he did, because it's fucking mind blowing, because it worked. They were doing that to stimulate him to follow him, and it worked, and the police fucking killed it. We can't wait to delve into this with you. Where do you want to start, Jack?
So let's go through the affidavit. And then after we're done with that, I do want to talk about this Facebook thing.
Absolutely.
Because I think it's super interesting, and it'll kind of tie everything together once we go through all of the evidence that we have. So totally. Do you want to kick it off?
Sure. If you haven't seen this affidavit, what it essentially is a police narrative of the scene and how they acquired evidence. So they start with entering the home.
Right.
So they entered, and this is a three-story house. There's two bedrooms on the first floor. There's two bedrooms on the second floor. Oh, no, there's two bedrooms on the first floor. There's one on the second, and there's two on the third.
Right.
So when they entered, west bedroom on the second floor, they found Zanna's room, and they realized it was hers because her driver's license and other belongings were in there. And Zanna was there just before the bathroom door. And that's where she was. And she had wounds which were caused by a sharp edge weapon. And Ethan Chapman, her boyfriend, was also in the room with her. And he, like we said, was sleeping over at her house that night after a night out.
And I think to this point right now, I think it was really interesting because I think when the police first released information, I'm pretty sure that they said that everybody was killed while they were sleeping. Yeah. And if Zanna was found near the door, she was obviously awake. And we're going to learn a little bit more in a second about why she was awake.
Right. And I also heard that Zanna had defensive wounds. So I think what happened, I'll just keep reading and then we'll speculate. So
yeah.
The third floor had two bedrooms and one bathroom, and the two bedrooms belonged to Kaylee and Madison, who were best friends from high school. But Kaylee had like kind of moved out and she was sleeping in Madison's room in the same bed. But in Kaylee's room, she had her dog locked up and the dog was unharmed. And the dog belonged to Kaylee and her ex-boyfriend. So when officers entered Madison's room, both of the girls were in bed, deceased. They were sharing a bed that night, and they were killed in their bed.
So while he's like kind of going through the room, he noticed what, and then I'm going to kind of read this like verbatim and then we can talk about it. He said, "I also later noticed what appeared to be a tan leather knife sheath laying on the bed next to Morgan's right side when it was viewed from the door. The sheath was later processed and had Kabar, USMC, and the United States Marine Corps Eagle Globe and Anchor insignia stamped on the outside of it. And it said the Idaho State Lab later located a single source of male DNA left on the bottom snap of the knife sheath." So this is huge information that we just learned about.
And what isn't included in the affidavit, which we can talk about right now, is how essential this DNA was and how it was used.
Right.
So what I thought was so fascinating was that they used genetic genealogy to identify Koberger's family. And they did it in an active case. We only usually see genetic genealogy up to this point. We see it to identify unidentified victims, mm-hmm. and cold cases.
Yeah.
It's usually seen as like a last resort, but here they weren't wasting any fucking time. And they brought the FBI in right away. And I think this is what they were working on. And they essentially found someone in his family and was just like, "Sup, do you have any relatives in Idaho?" And yeah. It was like, "Yeah, actually." And that's how they got his name. And he happened to have Elantra. And I was just blown away. And the DNA, like, God, he left this thing behind, and he's probably like, "God damn."
So, yeah, I have a question about this. So, I mean, we can skip. This is at the end of the affidavit, but we can talk about it right now. They ended up finding his DNA through his father because they're going through trash at his parents' house. And then they ended up matching it like a 99.99998% or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So my question is, if they were following him, because they were like on his tail following him for at least, I think, 4 days before they arrested him. Why don't you think that they tried to find trash from him? Was it just easier to get trash at the parents' house?
I think my personal theory is that he probably lived in an apartment complex, and it's really hard to get a surreptitious sample that way from trash, because you have to sift through trash and you don't know which trash comes from which apartment. Exactly. And also, because he has no criminal record, normally it's like, there's a sample we can match it to. He had no history. Like, they didn't have a sample of his DNA. So his dad is probably enough. And even if they matched it with genetic genealogy, they would need a surreptitious sample to confirm. But my guess, because it's a good question, would be just because he lives in a big building with lots of people.
Right.
And without a warrant, it has to be on the street.
Interesting.
Creepy.
Okay, so do we want to now, the knife sheath thing, I feel like, is the smoking gun kind of in everything that's going on. And we can, should I talk about the Facebook thing now?
Yes. So Jack found this thing on Facebook which directly links to the knife sheath, but also brings about more about this dude's psychology. So brace yourselves, because it's super strange.
Okay.
And so maybe we can even show the TikTok, can we?
Yeah. So I didn't find this. Many people have found it on TikTok.
She found the TikTok of someone talking about it.
I found it on my For You page. So basically, there was this group. Let me pull up the exact name of it. It was called the University of Idaho Case Discussion. Now, this was made, obviously, after the Moscow murders. And it was, I think, for people that went to University of Idaho to talk about everything that was going on. So after, you know, the murder happened, all these people joined, they're talking about the murder, and there was somebody in this Facebook group named Papa Roger, obviously an alias, it's not the person's name, And they were posting some really, really bizarre things. Now, I sent a picture of the avatar that they were using to Alexis. Now, do we want to describe what the avatar looks like?
Yes. And I think if you're watching video with us today, we're going to show it. He looks like an aged version of our suspect, like twins, like really similar. And he's dressed in a military uniform. Because Jack and I were wondering, I mean, this guy doesn't have military experience. But so what is this knife about? Who does it belong to? Maybe a grandfather. Who knows?
Yeah. And the avatar is it's like a rendering. It almost looks like those AI renderings that everybody was getting made a few weeks ago for that. They're paying like 30 bucks to make them, that I also did. But they're really cool. But yeah, it looks like it's like a 55-60-year-old version of him.
Yeah.
So this Papa Roger guy, he is in this Facebook group obsessively making posts about the murders. And now when you're looking back, they're really fucking weird. So I'm going to read the specific one that has to do with the knife sheath that the guy posted about. So Papa Roger, on November 30th, so this is 2 weeks after the murder, he said, of the evidence released, the murder weapon has been consistent with a large fixed knife blade. This leads me to believe that they found the sheath. This evidence was released prior to the autopsies. So
this, how would he know that?
How would he know that the knife sheath was, how did he even know there was a knife sheath or the killer brought it with them? Like, well, this is a very pointed, specific post to be made.
Well, and other users are being like, why would you think there's a sheath? Why would you think there's a sheath? Like, there's no evidence that there's a sheath. Like, unless it was you and you know you left your sheath.
Exactly.
But like, why would he do, like, if it is him and if he left his sheath and that Facebook user is him, why would he do this? Like, it's just more evidence against him. It looks so bad.
Well, what I see, it seems to be like, once you look at all of his posts, it's really fucking disgusting. But I think he's getting off on the fact that people are talking about him, right?
Yeah.
If this was him, because he goes on, and I'll read you some of the posts. Like, he goes on to make, I mean, dozens, if not hundreds of posts about very, very specific things about the murder to, you know, to spark this conversation from all of the users.
Right.
So he ends up getting into this fight with this guy named Dustin in the Facebook group. And the guy is just like, why are you asking these weird questions? Like, this has no relevance to anything. This is very specific. And to the fact that somebody ends up saying that he sounds really fucking creepy. And it's like, this guy sounds like a serial killer.
Yeah, he sure does.
So it's just like, there's so many comments on it that I'm trying to sift through, but that is the one specific thing in regards to the knife sheath. But do you want me to tell you some of the other posts that he made?
Sure. But I also want to say, it goes, like, if it is him in the Facebook group, it goes along with what we've seen from him on Reddit with these like surveys and like wanting to talk through, like, it probably is him instigating more like speculation. Cause you're right, he's like living, he's thriving in this, because he was doing this on Reddit with other people's crimes. Now he's seeing people doing it with his.
Right. I mean, he's totally getting off on it.
Right.
So there, in the beginning of this one TikTok, it's from Mama Mystery Podcast. I want to credit her. So she, it posts the one of the things from a survey, and it says, why did you choose that victim or target over others? And in the Facebook group, this user posted, why did the killer choose that house over all the others in the area? And what do we think is the entrance point to the crime scene? So if you've read this survey that he did, it's these very, very like pointed questions. And another one was, how on the Reddit survey was, how did you accomplish your goal? Please explain what you were thinking and your feeling. And on the Facebook group, it says, and this is cut off, one knife and four people. The killer took a big risk. The killer could have easily broke, the knife could have easily broken off or become ineffective on one or two of the murderers. Are we sure there's only one knife involved? So it's like these really bizarre, very specific questions. Do we think the killer took anything from the house? How long do we think the killer was in the house? And in the Reddit survey, before leaving, is there anything else you did? How did you leave the scene?
Yeah, right. And the things that you just mentioned, like the timeline in this case, which we'll get to, is one of the most shocking elements. But before we get into that, this came out, everyone's talking about this now. Are you ready to move on for the next subject?
Let me just read you a few more of these posts.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were done.
I'm going to kind of go through them really fast just so you can get a, like, an idea of like the volume of what this guy was posting. So One of the posts, the date of the killing was chosen on purpose. Thoughts? Another post. 4 weeks in and no suspects. What is the motive? Another post. How long do we think the killer was in the house? What do we think the height and weight of the killer is? Regardless of what has been released, I believe this is a sexually motivated crime, which is interesting. Did the killer walk, drive, or some combination of both to the scene? How did the killer leave the scene? Did he clean up at all? Did the killer stop at four victims out of exhaustion, convenience, or lack of knowledge? And the killer is not in the victim's immediate circle. The killer is not a student. Thoughts. Can someone post the evidence showing where the bodies were found? And then this is my favorite one. I feel like the white car isn't relevant.
Yeah, you would.
Of course you do.
Oh, my God.
And that post had like 250 comments probably being like,
why do you think it's irrelevant? Because it's the one thing the police said is relevant.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm fascinated by that. And right after he was arrested, all of the activity of that user stopped. And then a couple days later, the account was deleted. So I don't know if this was him. Of course, this is speculation and nothing is confirmed. But if it was him, maybe the police deactivated the account to save evidence, et cetera.
Yes. I bet you they copied it and deactivated, or have it a like shadow account
archived
through Facebook. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
So anyways.
No, I mean, it's terrifying. And if it is him, like, these serial killers keep upping the ante. Like, the Golden State Killer was scary enough. And now it's like, this dude is just terrifying. And I think that's everybody's fixation. Like, why, if he doesn't know any of them and we still don't know, this is just too fucking scary.
Okay, so it comes as no surprise that I have absolutely no idea how to cook. I don't want to learn how to cook. It's not really my thing. But when I tried Factor Meals, it was a freaking game changer. So Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Yeah, 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. So the first time I tried Factor Meals, I was actually blown away because I'm like, that's it. That's all it is. 2 minutes. And the meals are so delicious. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every single week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. And you can treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon. Ooh, fancy. Shrimp and blackened salmon. Like I said, they're so easy to prepare. I love them. So head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code degree50 at factormeals.com/degree50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
It's almost summer, and the best and most sustainable way to shop for a new season is on therealreal.com. The RealReal is the largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury resale. It's the only place you'll find brands like Hermes, Cartier, Prada, Dior, Staud, Zimmermann, Jacquemus, and more for up to 90% off retail. 10,000 plus new arrivals land every single day from hundreds of brands you love, all authenticated by a team of in-house experts. Whether it's that perfect wedding guest look, a new summer sandal, an updated beach tote, resort wear for your summer vacation, you're bound to find exactly what you're looking for, plus deals you won't get anywhere else on TheRealReal.com. Visit TheRealReal.com and use code FIRST at checkout for 20% off. Terms apply.
One of the most confusing things that has come out in this affidavit that I've seen on like every news headline is information that police got from one of the roommates who was not harmed during the attack.
Right.
Now their names have been made public, but I'm not going to say it here. Because I'm like her defender because everybody, let me just read it to you first. So first of all, it reads, so the roommate said she was awoken at approximately 4 a.m. by what she stated sounded like Kaylee playing with her dog in one of the upstairs bedrooms, which was located on the third floor.
Wait, before you go forward, right before that, it was talking in the affidavit about how Zanna received that DoorDash order at 4 a.m.
So maybe we should do timeline first. Okay, yeah. So we know that the four victims were home before 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Like it goes back and forth, 1:30, 1:25, whatever.
Everybody in the house, I think, was home by 2 a.m.
Sure. But this timeline where this happened is super, super tight. So Zanna had DoorDash delivered at 4. And I was talking about this last night. I'm like, that DoorDash driver, holy shit.
Oh, my God.
You know? So, and then we know that at 4:12, Zanna was on TikTok.
Right. So she was awake at 4:12 in the morning.
Right. So what we also know is that at around 4:17, a security camera 50 feet from Zanna's bedroom on a neighboring house, so it was the next door neighbor's house, caught noise, which sounded like a dog barking, and it sounded like maybe whimpering or crying. So they heard that.
And then a large thump, I think it said as well.
Right. And then the cameras on neighboring homes that caught the Elantra sees it zooming away at around 4:25. So this shit happened DoorDash came at 4. So it had to be between 4:12 and 4:25. This shit happened in 15 minutes.
That is so, so fucking crazy to me.
It is so crazy and well planned. You know, and so close, like there was a DoorDash driver and like she was awake, and all of this is going to come circling back now when we hear from the roommate who survived, right?
Well, also, I think an interesting point is there was so much speculation about if the killer was like waiting in the house or if they had snuck in or something. So obviously this now cuts out the possibility of the killer had snuck into the house before and was waiting for them to get home, because there is no forced entry anywhere, right? That we know of.
No forced entry, but do we know when we first saw the Elantra enter the neighborhood? Because like me, I still don't know quite about that.
Yeah, I have this. Let me find it really quick. Okay, so as far as his car being spotted in the neighborhood. So on the affidavit, it says a review of footage from multiple videos obtained by the King Road neighborhood, that's the street that they're on, showed multiple sightings of suspect vehicle one starting at 3:29 a.m. and ending at 4:20 a.m. So, and this is really important too, because he says, based off my experience as a patrol officer in this area, very limited number of vehicles travel in the area during the morning hours. And it says, upon review of the video, there are only a few cars that enter and exit this area during this time frame. But this one specific white Elantra is coming in and out four different times within that very, very short period of time.
Right. When I read that, I was like, oh, so he like drove by a bunch of times. And was he psyching himself up? Was he waiting for DoorDash to leave? Like, what was he doing? And also, if you're trying to get away with it, like, what was he thinking? Like, with everyone's Ring cameras and shit now, first of all, don't try to get away with murder. But like, if he's thinking he's all Joe criminology, right? Like, it just doesn't seem smart.
And we're going to get to the whole turning his phone off for just that period of time when he was committing these murders, too. It's like, this guy is the stupidest fucking criminal of all time.
Maybe ever. Yeah. But real quick. So one of the earth shattering things that we're seeing a lot now is, apparently, one of the surviving roommates on the first floor saw the suspect.
Yeah.
Which is causing a lot of confusion for people. But we'll just read exactly her account. So she had been home. I think she went to bed around 1:30 or something. And she stated that she woke up at around 4 a.m. by what sounded like Kaylee playing with her dog in one of the upstairs bedrooms on the third floor.
Yeah.
A short time later, she said she thought she heard Kaylee say something to the effect of, there's someone here. So Zanna was awake at this time. So while this is happening, Zanna's in her room on TikTok with Ethan.
Yeah.
So the roommate then said she looked out of her bedroom but didn't see anything when she heard the comment about, could someone be in the house? Then she opened the door a second time when she heard what she thought was crying coming from Zanna's room. So she thinks she hears a weird noise, maybe crying coming from Zanna's. And then she thinks she hears a male voice say something to the effect of, it's okay, I'm going to help you, which is fucking terrifying.
So scary.
Fucking terrifying. And I don't even want to speculate as to why he would have said that. Maybe to calm Zanna down after murdering her boyfriend, or maybe I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's makes me sick to my stomach. So this is the part of this affidavit that's really causing a lot of questions to be asked. So
right.
The surviving roommate then says she opened her door for the third time after she heard crying and saw a figure clad in black clothing and a mask that covered the person's mouth and nose walking towards her, describing the figure as 5'10 or taller, male, not very muscular, but athletically built with bushy eyebrows. The male walked past her as she stood in a frozen shock phase. Then the male walked towards the back sliding glass door, and she locked herself in her room after seeing the male. She didn't recognize him. But like, okay, so everyone is freaking out, being like, why didn't she call the cops?
She saw the murderer. She should have called the cops immediately, whatever.
Yes. First of all, everyone was out drinking this night, so maybe she was drunk. Maybe she was fucking scared and locked her door, and maybe her phone wasn't, I keep being like, maybe her phone wasn't in her room and she was scared.
I saw a really, really poignant TikTok about this from an older gentleman that I don't know what he is. He's a psychologist or something. But he was talking about the fact that we're all looking at this information, knowing all of the knowledge that we know, knowing that a murder occurred that day, and we're looking at her actions knowing what we know, right?
Yes.
Okay, if you put yourself in her position, knowing what she knew, okay, let's think about it. She heard crying and she heard a dog barking. She thought it was her roommate playing with the dog. And then it's like, a drunk girl could be crying for any number of reasons. I cried all the time when I was that young. Like, that literally shows absolutely nothing. And then she sees this random dude in her house, okay? Obviously, retrospectively, he was a murderer and really fucking creepy. But their house is a party house. There's people coming and going. I think that they had a noise complaint at one point, and when the cops came over, it was just a bunch of random guys at their house. Like, none of the roommates were even there. So they're used to having random people coming and going in the house. Brian Koberger is terrifying, but like, maybe from afar, he's like, could be sort of attractive.
Well,
I don't know.
He's 28, but he's only 5'10". So like, in person, he actually, knowing that, he's probably a small guy, right?
Yeah.
And like, Ethan's upstairs. Maybe she knew that. Maybe this is a friend of Ethan's. And also,
or
the mask.
Was...
This is also Idaho in fucking November. Okay. So it's freezing. There's snow everywhere. A guy in a black mask isn't that a ski mask. Like, it's Idaho.
Also, like, they didn't say what type of mask it was. Like, my first thought went to it was like a COVID, like a surgical mask.
Oh,
like, maybe
yeah.
It was somebody getting in an Uber if they're still wearing masks or something. Like, to me, the mask thing isn't, yeah, or it's a mask because it's freezing outside. Like, but like, what infuriates me is people being like, she should have called the cops immediately. Like, she knew it. It's like, she actually didn't. And you're right. She could have been drunk. She could have been half asleep. Like, she could have just seen a random dude in her house. That's a house that people came and go all the time. We lived together when we were that age, mm-hmm. in a party house.
With random people all the time.
Random people coming and going all the time. If I would have woken up after I heard a friend crying in another room and I saw a random guy like leaving, I could have been like, wow, that might have been a guy that she was hooking up with that fucking pissed her off.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's so many things that could have happened, and that is easily, you know, what could have been in her mind at that point.
Dude, totally. And like, depending on your personality, right? Like, maybe she's more of a passive person. Maybe she's not super tight with one of the girls upstairs. Like, you just, there's so much where you're like, I'm not going to fucking insert myself where I don't belong. You don't know the dynamics of these roommates. You don't know how, we just don't know. And I agree, like, people hating on her, I'm like, she feels shitty enough. Leave her the fuck alone.
Oh my God, dude, her life is like ruined anyway.
In the survivor's guilt, she must feel like, I hope she doesn't. I'm not projecting that on her, but like, leave her alone. She lost four of her friends. She was there. She's probably so traumatized. And the last thing she needs is people dragging her.
Well, people had already been dragging her as a suspect, like all these stupid fucking internet sleuths.
Yeah, the cops are so dumb. They couldn't rule, like,
they're ruling them out. So, well, that's another thing that I thought was really interesting, because the cops were ruling people out really, really fucking fast. And people are like, why, you know, the ex-boyfriend, like, why did they rule him out so fast? So it's like, because they already knew
proof.
The guy.
Because everyone's cell phone says where they are. And if you're on your phone on TikTok at midnight and not with, like, they can clear people so fast. We have a Ring camera here at our office. We have Ring cameras. Like, I'll be like, I have Ring cameras on my balcony. I'll be like, cops, just look. I never left. We have cameras in the garage. Like, it's super easy to clear people in that case.
And also going back to the roommate, I was watching another TikTok from like a psychologist, and she was talking about, you know, it's the fight, flight, or freeze kind of a thing that people can find themselves in a moment of terror,
confusion,
and,
yeah,
and trauma and confusion. And she was talking about shock in general and how shock can last hours, days, weeks, months. It's like you don't know if, say, she did think that something horrible happened and she thought that she was seeing a murderer in her house, like that period of shock could have lasted until the next morning when they finally, you know, called the cops, or somebody finally called the cops. We don't know who actually did at that point. So I hate the judgment and the dragging that goes on for just this poor fucking girl that is traumatized enough.
It's also like everyone thinks that they would be brave in these scenarios, but I would not. Like if I thought something, I would be so scared that there was still someone there.
Yeah.
That like there was more than what, even if say pretend she thought there was a murder, maybe there's more than two, maybe there's more than one. And she just saw one leave. Like there's a million things that could have been going through her head. And like none of us can understand because we weren't fucking there.
And it's like we get into this with true crime all the time with people's demeanor and how their 911 calls go and all this kind of stuff. It's like, of course, shoulda, coulda, woulda if it was you, but you weren't in that situation and you weren't the person that was reacting to things. So we don't know. Everybody acts completely differently in situations like that. So it's like you cannot judge somebody for not acting the way that you think that they should act in a situation.
What I would like to talk about was whether he saw her.
Yeah.
And because like we know she saw him because she made a pretty good description. Again, this looks so bad for Brian because it's like what he looks like. Bushy eyebrows. Like this is hit this dude. But like, did he see her? And if so, why did he leave her? Like, and what does that mean? He was going after only four people. Like, did he not see her? Like, I'm so confused about what happened there.
Well, and this is what I think is really interesting, again, about that Facebook account, because there was a post about that. And it's like, why did you think that the killer stopped at four victims? Was it out of exhaustion, knowledge, or whatever the third reason would have been? I guess just like deciding not to kill the last two people. But I don't know. You also have to think about he committed these four murders in succession in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, like 15 minutes.
Like, who, like, God knows, like, I don't know. He could have just been trying to get out of there really fast because the dog was barking. And that was like his time to escape. Like, I don't know. There's like, who knows if he saw her or not?
I don't know. I'm just, the only thing people should be saying about it is thank fucking God she's okay. You know? Because like, if he saw her, there's no explanation for it. And I'm just glad, like, it's so scary. I get the chills every time I talk about these people. Like,
I know.
It's awful.
Awful. Okay, so back to the timeline. I'll give a quick TLDR, because there's a lot in the affidavit about how they tracked down his car, the white Elantra belonging to him at Washington State University. But basically, they ended up tracking his car, leaving Washington State University, driving to Moscow during the time of these murders. And they got him coming back like later that morning, and they ended up, you know, looking for white Elantras at the school, and they found his car like pretty immediately.
I think really it was fast,
like a couple days after the murder or something like that. So they tracked him down quite fast. Mm-hmm. And then I think the next thing after that was trying to get his phone records, right?
Yeah. And the phone is really interesting. So again, there's a lot of minutia here, but we'll just boil it down. So he had the wherewithal to turn his phone off when he drove, when the Elantra is first spotted, like on the video cameras around 3:30 that morning, his phone is off.
Well, his phone is on for a while he's leaving the college, and I think he's driving for a bit, and then all of a sudden it just loses track
when he gets close to the house,
right?
And then he turns it off, and then when he gets back to the university it goes back on,
right?
But what's interesting is that he returned to the scene at around 9 a.m the following morning. Well, not the following morning, hours later, right? 5-6 hours later after he does this,
right?
He returns to the scene at around 9 a.m and he forgets to turn his phone off. So his phone pings right near the house. And he's also caught on cameras again. And Jack and I were speculating, it's like, did he come back because he left the sheath there? Or did he come back because he wanted to see if the cops had been called yet?
So this is, and the cops hadn't been called at this point.
No, wow. And like, this also brings back, like, did he see the roommate? Right? Like, did he see the roommate there? Because like, then he's like, why haven't the cops been like, I'm sure he was confused too, or he didn't see her, or he came back to like, I don't know. There are like a lot of question marks here, and none of it, it all contradicts each other and none of it makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I didn't even, when I was reading through it, I must've missed that part in the affidavit that he came back. But I guess once they pulled all of his phone records too, they found out that he had been stalking that house, at least. I don't know if it was one of the specific girls or what it was. That info is not available to us, but
how often had he got, like, how many times?
I think it said 12 times.
Holy shit.
Between, I think that they got the phone records from June until November or maybe December. And I think it said that he had been on that street 12 different times. And most of those times were in the middle of the night. I think one was during the day, but that definitely confirms that this was not a random targeted house. Like, he had been stalking that house, at least.
For some reason or another. Well, and we know that, like, the Golden State Killer, for example, chose his victims based on the house. Like,
right.
he would need these certain things. He needed, like, a green belt or an alley behind it. He liked one-story houses. Like, there were all these things he was searching for. And based on what homeboy was studying, like, I think the same thing happened. I mean, there's no obvious connection between any of them and him. I think he was like, kids are easy, they're drunk a lot. Like,
I don't know though, but because we don't know what he, like, anything about what his search history was. We don't know if he was like stalking them on social media, if he was like, and this was one of those rumors that I don't know what was true or not, but I heard that one or two of the girls might have been working at a vegan restaurant or something. Did you hear
really
about that?
No,
I heard that. I don't know if it was confirmed, but like, I don't know. You've got to think this guy, he's obviously like some sort of an incel too. Like, he was fucking weird. He's super creepy. Like, he was God knows what he was doing in his alone time, like on his phone and whatever. Like, these, especially like Maddie and Kaylee, like, there are these two cute,
beautiful,
young, beautiful girls. Like, I can't think that that was just like a random target.
No.
You know,
it can't. I mean, it's not. And based on the questions he's asking in his weird rogue surveys in Facebook, he has put a lot of thought into this, and it's terrifying, you know, like,
yeah,
it's so sad. It's so fucking sad. And I was so happy to hear they found out about the arrest, I think, the day of Kaylee and Madison's memorial service. And they were having a joint one. And I was like, and they were saying, we kept putting it off, but it was like 7 weeks. And I'm just so fucking happy because I look at those two girls, I'm like, could be me and you, Jack, back then. Like, it's like two best friends. What a scary, sad fucking thing. And I'm just glad they had each other and that Xana had Ethan. But like, holy fuck, this shit makes your blood run cold.
Do you think, like, what do you think that the police were telling the family? Like, were the police releasing any information to the families, or was that even too risky to do?
No. What I heard was Ethan's brother said they got a call and said that there was news, like, at 11 p.m. and that, like, but they didn't even tell them what it was.
No.
And then, like, he was like, I didn't sleep all night because I just knew something.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think so, because Kaylee's dad was really vocal. He was going on all the news stations, kind of leaving little like breadcrumbs of what he was told, but he still wasn't supposed to say. But no, I do not think they knew shit, because I think they knew there'd be, you know, grief-stricken family members can fuck up an investigation. Yeah. Are they allowed to? I don't know. Emotionally, I agree. Like, I get it. But like, they knew who he was early on, and they said they knew they were close early on. And they just had to take all these punches from everyone saying they were doing a terrible job. But I really don't think anyone knew, like, that this guy was on the radar.
It's just so crazy. It's so nobody's radar, like, whatsoever. But yeah, I mean, they did an incredible job. I can't believe how fast they zeroed in on this guy. Like, it's pretty fascinating.
Considering the ironclad case, right? Like, they could have arrested him in a week, but that's not how science or genetic genealogy or any of these things work, right? So, right. like, this is a fucking tight case against him, and that just took time.
Especially because of the fact that, obviously, we know that they had friends come over the next morning that probably contaminated the whole crime scene. Like, there, it reminds me of, like, a JonBenet kind of a thing. It's like, there, that could have been really, really fucking bad and ruined all of the evidence that they could have used, like, for this case. So that makes it equally, like, even more impressive.
But to be honest, he screwed himself over, because without that sheath, it would have been a lot harder, because of all the DNA in that house, because it's a party house. If there wasn't a sheath, they would have probably found a shred of his DNA, but they would have had to test every surface and eliminate hundreds of samples. The only foreign item in there that didn't belong was the sheath.
Yeah.
So Brian, like, here you go. Find me in less than 2 months. Like, if he hadn't have left that, this would have been way harder.
Yeah. No, it's so true. Oh my gosh. This is one of the craziest stories of our generation.
Yeah, it really is. And just seeing, you know, him being pulled over. So he was arrested in Pennsylvania at his parents' house where he grew up. And there's all this news footage, like we talked about, of him being pulled over by Indiana police. He was pulled over twice in 20 minutes for quote unquote tailgating. And like, you can see the guy's dad, Brian's dad, on the body cam. And he's just, I feel so bad for him, because it's like his last moments of peace, you know,
yeah.
Where he could still like enjoy his son and have him in his mind in that way, you know, because holy fuck balls. Like, they were, I mean, the FBI's denied that they instructed the Indiana police to pull them over.
I thought that they admitted that they...
It keeps going back and forth. I found one article that says, like, they did it on purpose to look at his hands, but I saw articles saying they deny it and that it was just a coincidence. I'm like, I don't believe that.
Weren't they, like, within 20 minutes of each other?
Yes, twice in 20 minutes.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, it had to have been on purpose. It's like, you gotta fucking terrify this guy a little bit and yeah. see what he does. Like, I heard it's like they were doing it to see if he would go on the run, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean, or to see if he had any like defensive marks on his body.
Calm and collected, though,
until when the dad said, they're like, where are you going? And he's like, we're driving from Washington State University or something. And then you see him give him a look, because he said something like, we're going to Chipotle, or I can't yeah. remember exactly where he said that they were going. So it's like, but he's calm and collected too at the same time. It's just, it's pretty fascinating, because those are like some of the first videos that you're like even seeing of him at all.
It's just crazy, like, how many people are coming out of the woodwork being like, I knew this guy. I went to elementary school with him. I went to high school with him. Like, in all the different perceptions, like all of the accounts people are sharing are so conflicting.
Well, and we are talking about this, I think, over New Year's. We're talking about, obviously, the first degree, right? Like, this is kind of the first degree happening in real time of all these people finding out that this person that they knew is this absolute fucking monster, and how crazy that is to find out about somebody that you know. So, yeah, it really sort of puts our podcast into perspective.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if anyone's going to come forward, like, knowing this is who he was, you know, like, or what red flags were missed. Like, I mean, but it's really easy to disguise. It's really easy to hide red flags if you're a criminology student.
Yeah.
You know, because all of it can look like research. Like, that's reasonable, you know? Yeah.
Well, and I out of all the people that have come out that know him, I don't feel like I've seen many people that are like, he was a good friend of mine. It's more so people like, he was my TA in class, or I knew him in high school. I don't think there's any women that have come out to say that they've dated him, or any people that have been like, that was my best friend, or somebody that I knew really well. So that's kind of interesting too. Maybe he didn't have anybody really close to him.
Doesn't sound like it.
No. It's fucking crazy, dude.
Ugh.
Oh my God. Well, I hope, I'm not going to say you enjoyed this podcast, but like, I hope that, you know, maybe you found something informative. You know, we have been very fascinated and have been following along with every new update that we've been given about it. And I hope that these families can find some semblance.
They won't. We're devastated for the families, and we're sickened by anyone who's been negatively affected by the publicity of the case. And like, we're here, you know, to set whatever record straight. We're reading from the affidavit, you know, and it's like, we just want to encourage everyone to be kind and compassionate to those on the outskirts of this, because it's just like, it's reverberating across the country, and it's an unfathomable crime. It really is.
Yeah. And if you're out there posting speculative armchair detective TikToks, stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to kind of like speculate with your friends privately, but like, do not put anything out there publicly that can hurt an innocent person.
Yeah. You know? Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see you next time.
See you next time on Killing Time. It'll be lighter, but I'm glad we did this. Hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you later.